a clumsy mix of old and new. The cobblestone streets have been paved, which is disappointing because I always loved the smell of mud when it rained, and the bakery across the street has burned down, so I won't get to wake up to the scent of baking bread in the mornings. A lot has changed in the last few years. I'm rushed to the kitchen for dinner after I greet everyone. Mexican ladies are always trying to feed you, whether you like it or not. As much as I get sick of eating Mexican food every single day of my life, if heaven existed, I know it would smell like fried tortillas. Mama Jacinta gives me a giant plate of beans, rice, and shredded beef tostadas covered with sour cream, lettuce, and chopped tomatoes. "You're too skinny," she tells me. "By the time you leave, your mother won't even recognize you. You'll see." No one has ever called me skinny. I've lost a few pounds because the medication has made my appetite weird lately. One day I want to eat the whole world, and the next day everything grosses me out. But I'm not even close to being thin. I finish the whole plate and then ask for seconds, which pleases Mama Jacinta. I also drink an entire bottle of Coca-Cola, which I normally don't even like, but it tastes so much better here. Tia Fermina and Tia Estela sit across from me and tell me how much they've missed me, and the rest of the family crowds around me and asks a million questions. How is your mother? How is your father? How cold does it get in Chicago? Why haven't you visited us in so long? When are you going to come back? What's your favorite color? Can you teach me English? I feel like a celebrity. My family back home never treats me this way because I'm the designated pariah. Here, they even laugh at all my dumb jokes. Every single one. Maybe Ama was right for once. Maybe this is what I needed. Mama Jacinta teaches me how to make the menudo they sell near the town square. Unlike the porqueria of other cities and states, her version is made with meat, leg bones, and maíz. That's it. No chile rojo to hide the dirty tripe. First, Mama has to track down a butcher who's just slaughtered a cow. Then, she and Tio Chucho pick up the buckets of dirty cow stomach and take them to a woman they've hired to wash it. Mama Jacinta says this poor woman is even more jodida than she is, and I believe her. I don't know what I would do if my job was to literally wash shit. Mama Jacinta says that she used to clean the meat in the river, but it became so polluted that she had to start washing it in an outdoor sink. Thank God, because yesterday I saw stray dogs splashing in that filmy water. What's left of it, anyway. Once the meat is thoroughly de-shitted, it's rubbed with calcium oxide and left for a while. When the calcium oxide has softened the delicate inner skin, it's peeled off slowly and carefully. Then it's washed again and again until it gleams white as fresh snow. The piece of tripe that comes from the butt has a beautiful honeycomb pattern. This is called las casitas. The thinner tripe with horizontal grooves has thick seams called callo. All the pieces are cut into slivers, and the slivers are cut into squares. The nerves are tough and slippery and resist the knife. The raw meat has a strong animal smell, and as you slice and slice, the tissue inevitably gets under your nails, and the scent lingers on your hands for hours. The leg bones, the tripe, and the white maíz are cooked in a giant pot all night on low heat. The texture of the meat can be shocking to the average American tongue, but I like it. The pieces are soft and chewy, and the surface of the soup glitters with yellow globs of delicious fat. It's topped with lime juice, white onion, and dry oregano. When we're finished slicing, Mama Jacinta gives me a bowl of yesterday's menudo and a cup of té de manzanilla. She says it's good for nerves. Why do you think I'm nervous?
You're not?
It's more complicated than that.
Why don't you tell me about it?
Thank you, but I don't really feel like it. I look down into my empty bowl. A fly lands on a tiny piece of meat. I wave it away.
Are you afraid I'll tell your mother?
Well, yeah.
Whatever you say stays here with me. I know you and your mother don't get along, but you're more alike than you think,
she says, stirring in the honey. I seriously doubt that.
You know, she was always the rebellious one. She was the first one in the family to move to the other side. But you knew that, didn't you? I told her not to go, but she said she wanted to live in Chicago where she could work and have her own house.
Rebellious? Ama? My mind can't process that. My mother is the most rigid person I know.
She never listened to me, always did what she wanted. You shouldn't be so hard on her, mija. She's been through so much.
Like what? I know my sister died, and that's been a living nightmare for everyone. But is there something else I don't know? Something begins howling outside. Oh my God, what is that?
Oh, the cats. They are very amorous right now, even during the day.
Mama Jacinta smiles. Gross.
And they're two boy cats. Can you believe that?
Gay cats? I gasp and slap the table. I've never heard of such a thing. Mama Jacinta chuckles. Okay, back to the story, Mama. What else happened? Is there more? She shakes her head. Her pale face suddenly pulled into a deep frown. The menudo gurgles in my stomach. The animal taste crawls up my throat.
They got robbed when they crossed the border, she says, wiping her hands on her apron and looking toward the door. Yes, they lost all their money. Didn't your mother ever tell you that?
Yeah, she said it was the worst days of her life. But that was before Olga died. Mama Jacinta rubs her temples, as if this conversation were giving her a headache.
Ay, mi pobre hija. She's had such bad luck in this life. I hope God has mercy on her from now on. She suffered too much.
I don't know what to say. So I drink the rest of my lukewarm tea and watch one of the cats pace back and forth outside. Chapter 20. When I look in the faded mirrors in Mama Jacinta's house, sometimes I think I almost look like my sister, which means I kind of look like my mother, especially when I take off my glasses. Now that I lost a little bit of weight, I can see the faint suggestion of cheekbones. I guess our noses were similar, too. Rounded and slightly turned up at the tip. I used to think Olga and I didn't look like sisters, but I was wrong. There are black and white pictures of my great-grandparents in several rooms of the house. They look serious in each one, as if they're ready to stab the photographer. Maybe it wasn't customary to smile for portraits back then. I know people used to believe photographs would steal their souls, which makes sense to me. I never paid attention to Ama's old bedroom when I was a kid. She and Tia Estela used to share a cramped, dusty room all the way in the back of the house. They even had to sleep in the same lumpy bed, which has never been replaced. I can't imagine having to sleep next to my sister my whole life. We've always been poor, and I've never had much privacy, but at least I've always had my own room. When my grandfather was alive, he kept making additions whenever they had more children, but he was never able to keep up. There were 8 of them. I hate when Ama goes through my things, and here I am doing it to her. I don't find much, though. Just a wooden chest with faded flowered dresses and tarnished bracelets. In the corner of the room, I see a framed drawing I never noticed before. It's up high, way past eye level. I take it down and look at it closely. It's Ama wearing a long dress, standing in front of the fountain in the town square. She looks exactly like Olga. Or Olga looked exactly like her. I wonder who drew this. I find Mama Jacinta cleaning the kitchen table.
Mama Jacinta, who drew this picture of Ama?
Your father.
What do you mean, my father? My father doesn't draw.
Who said he doesn't?
I've never heard anything about this. I don't know why, but this almost makes me angry. How didn't I know this about my own dad?
You didn't know Rafael could draw? He was the town artist. He drew everyone, even the mayor. Haven't you seen that drawing of your tia Fermina hanging in her living room? Your father drew that, too.
Not once in my whole life have I ever seen my dad draw. When I think of Apa, I picture him soaking his feet in front of the TV. But how could he stop? I mean, if that's what he loved to do, why wouldn't he do it?
He probably got too busy with all the responsibilities of being a husband and father. You know how that is. You know how hard he works.
Mama Jacinta takes off her apron and hangs it on a rusty hook near the fridge. But he could have made time. If I don't write, I feel like I'm going to die. How could he stop just like that?
I don't know. But it's a shame because he was famous around here.
I wonder how much longer until Ama sends for me. Sometimes I lie awake, thinking of what I'll do when I get home. How am I going to find Olga's boyfriend? Or should I call him her lover? That word sounds ridiculous, though. I can go to her old office, but I have no idea who he is. Two things are clear, though. He wanted to make sure no one would ever find out, and he's the kind of person who could afford an expensive hotel almost every week. He has to be a doctor. The nights are usually quiet, except for the meowing cats, or the rooster next door that never knows what time it is. I like it when it rains because the soft pitter-patter on the tin roof is soothing. But it never lasts more than a few minutes. I twist under the scratchy blankets, thinking about Olga and worrying about what will happen to me if I miss too many days of school. I write notes to myself about what to do when I leave. 1. Read all of Olga's emails. 2. Talk to Mr. Ingman about what to do about my absences. 3. Find a summer job so I can pay for my trip to college. When I'm lucky, I fall asleep before the sun comes up. My cousin Belén, Tia Fermina's youngest daughter, is the town hot girl. She's dark, blue-eyed, and about a foot taller than I am. Her waist is impossibly small, and she loves to show it off in half-shirts and skin-tight dresses. Wherever we go, every living creature eyes her up and down. I swear to God, I even saw a stray dog check her out. She gets marriage proposals when we walk down the street, and all she does is laugh and flip her hair. I feel kind of ugly next to her. Belén has decided that she's going to show me around and introduce me to anyone we see. She comes over to Mama Jacinta's house after school and drags me out, though I'd rather stay in the yard reading. My cousin doesn't understand that I can be very awkward and that I don't like talking to strangers. Today we say hello to a pair of twins, nicknamed Gorduras and Mantecas, literally fats and lards, in front of the supermarket. Mexican nicknames are as cruel as they are hilarious. We usually get ice cream or aguas frescas from the town square and then take a tour of Los Ojos, even though I've been here before. When we go up and down the hills, I study all the colorful houses and try to peer inside, since everyone leaves their doors open during the day. Usually, I don't see anything interesting. But yesterday, I saw a woman in a towel dancing to Juan Gabriel in her living room. I like taking these walks during dinner time because of the dinner smells wafting from the houses. Toasted chiles, stewed meat, boiled beans. Belen gossips about everyone in town, even when I have no idea who they are. The latest dirt is that the lady who owns the most popular burger stand is having sex with her second cousin. She also tells me the story of a man named Santos who left Los Ojos many years ago with the dream of becoming a dancer in Los Angeles. He tried crossing the border several times before he gave up and stayed in Tijuana. The rumor was that he began dressing like a woman and became a prostitute. When he returned to Los Ojos several years later, he was practically a living skeleton. Toward the very end, the sores all over his face and mouth attracted flies. His mother would sit next to him and shoo them away with a rag. Some of the townspeople said that it was his own fault for being gay, for bending over for all of Tijuana. I keep trying to interrupt and explain to Belen that AIDS isn't a gay disease, that anyone can get it. But she doesn't listen. She never seems to listen to anything I say. I feel a longing in my chest when we pass Apa's abandoned childhood home. Mama Jacinta points it out every time I'm here. No one has lived there in a long, long time, and it's about to fall apart. All of my father's brothers and sisters are scattered across the United States, Texas, Los Angeles, North Carolina, and Chicago. His parents died right after he and Ama left Los Ojos. My grandfather got a tumor that ate away his lungs, and my grandma followed him a few months later. They say she died of sadness. Can I miss people I've never met? Because I think I do. Belen tries to get me to talk to boys from her school, but I'm never interested in any of them. Maybe it's because of the medication, but sex? Anything related to it is not really on my mind.
That's where the narcos beheaded the mayor, Belen says casually, after we pass a group of her friends.
She nods toward a depressing park made of metal and concrete.
What?
I'm not sure if I heard her correctly.
You didn't know? They used to shoot each other in the streets and blow up houses. It hasn't happened in a while, though. See?
She says, pointing to a charred house in the distance.
A Molotov cocktail.
I shudder as I think of the mayor's head rolling down the concrete and onto the street.
Why would Ama send me here?
Are we safe? Would they murder us too? I feel hot and cold at the same time. I jump when I hear a bird squawk. Belen laughs.
No, tonta. Why would they care about you? Unless you're trafficking drugs and didn't tell me about it.
I shrug, feeling stupid.
Oh, but never ever stay out late, especially alone. No one does anymore.
Chapter 21. My cousin Paulina is turning 3, so I can't imagine that slaughtering and frying an animal would be very exciting for her, but that's how parties always are. Every milestone or accomplishment leads to alcohol and obscene amounts of fried meat. That afternoon, Belen, Mama Jacinta, and I walk over to the venue where the rest of the family has been preparing all morning. When we cross the town square, the Indian ladies, with long black braids that look like rope, try to sell us nopales. Their thick hair reminds me of Ama. Strangers on the street have offered her money in exchange for her shiny braids. The women sit on the ground, with a large wicker basket full of peeled and sliced cactus in little plastic bags. How poor do you have to be to sell something that's free? I can literally walk up to any nopal in town and cut off a paddle. I see Mama Jacinta do it all the time. The worst part is not even peeling them. It's getting rid of all the slime. I've always wondered why the bottoms of tree trunks here were painted white, but I've never asked about it. I stare at the sad, rusted fountain and wonder if they'll ever turn the water back on. A girl with a baby strapped to her back with an embroidered orange cloth stands up and puts her hand in front of me.
Por favor, señorita,
she pleads.
Una limosna.
She looks about 13. So small and bony, I can't imagine that baby coming out of her. I pray it's not hers.
Don't listen to them, Belen says. They're here begging every day. She should work like everyone else.
Typical Indias. Belen practically spits out the words. I don't understand why she thinks she's so much better than they are. She's just as dark and wears the same frayed red dress every other day. Have you looked at yourself? I mumble.
What?
Nothing. I turn back to the baby, who is crying now, his face covered with dirt and snot. I give the girl all the change in my pocket. Belen crosses her arms over her chest and shakes her head. The party venue is owned by Los Garzas, the richest family in Los Ojos. According to Belen, they got rich by selling drugs. When I ask her what kind of drugs, all she says is, "The worst kind." I hear a violent squealing when we approach and look at Mama Jacinta, my stomach sinking.
They're killing it right now? I thought it would be dead already.
Sorry, mija. We can take a walk and come back if you want. Don't be a baby, Belen says. You eat meat, don't you?
Yeah, but I've never seen my tacos killed before my very eyes.
Ay, Dios mío, you Americans are so delicate, Belen says. Come on, let's go for a walk, Mama Jacinta says,
placing her warm hand on my arm.
No, it's okay. Let's go.
Tio Chucho and my cousin Andres drag the writhing pig with a long red rope. Its desperate and brutal cries give me goosebumps. Once they get the poor thing onto a slab of concrete, Andres stabs it in the heart.
Good job, mijo,
Tio says. The pig squirms all over the ground, and its squeals become deeper and more anguishing. The blood gushes from its chest. I feel lightheaded.
Are you excited for the chicharrones, prima?
Andres shouts to me.
Oh, yeah. Delicious. Can't wait.
I yell back. When the pig finally dies, Andres and Tio Chucho hang it by its hind legs and bleed it out into a bucket. Once it's drained, they begin to cut it into pieces. I try not to look, but I can't help it. My eyes are drawn to the blood. After a while, I can hear the pop and crackle of the frying flesh. I'm sick to my stomach, but my mouth still waters. The human body is so weird sometimes. Once all the meat is cooked, Tia Estela brings me a plate of rice, beans, and chicharrones.
Ándale, mija,
she says, and squeezes my shoulder.
You need to put some weight back on.
It's funny how in the United States I'm too fat, and in Mexico I'm too skinny. I know Tia is worried about me. The Montenegro women are excellent worriers. I smile and say thank you, because the rudest thing you can do to a Mexican lady is refuse her food.
Might as well spit on a picture of La Virgen de Guadalupe,
or turn the TV off during Sábado Gigante. I take a few chicharrones, put them in a soft tortilla, and drown them in dark red salsa. I eat them without much difficulty. But when I make my next taco, I see a few thick hairs jutting from the skin. I don't want everyone to think I'm a spoiled American princess, so I close my eyes and inhale the taco as quickly as possible. I imagine my face a beautiful shade of putrid green when I'm finished,
but I'm proud of my triumph. The dance floor begins to get crowded once everyone is full of pig meat. The music is tinny and crackly, partly because of the cheap sound system, but I still like it. The accordions sound ridiculously joyful, even when the songs are about death. Tia Fermina and Tio Raúl dance cheek to cheek. Belén dances with Mama Jacinta's lanky next-door neighbor. I watch everyone's jumpy little dances as the sun bakes me into a cocoon of laziness. I start to nod off in my chair when Andrés pokes me in the shoulder and tells me we're going to ride horses.
Come on, prima,
he says, pulling me up. I'm tired. I don't feel like it. I try to slump back down.
It'll be good for you.
How?
Trust me.
Defeated, I follow Andrés to the field next to the venue, where two black horses are tied to a fence.
This one is Isabela,
he says, pointing to the smaller one.
And this is Sebastián.
Andrés rubs the horse's side and smiles. Nice to meet you. I pretend to shake their hooves.
They're married, you know.
Married? What are you talking about? Imagining Isabela in a wedding gown makes me laugh so hard I snort. Did they have a wedding? Did they waltz? Did she throw a bouquet?
Obviously they didn't have a wedding, tonta, but they're a real couple.
Andrés seems annoyed that I find it so funny, that I'm having a hard time believing in romantic love between two animals. Really?
When they're separated, Sebastián cries. I swear to God. Big, fat tears.
Andrés looks serious, so I stop laughing. He even crosses himself to make a point. As Andrés gets the saddles from the shed, I pet Isabela's back and run my fingers through her coarse black mane. Her coat is so dark it's almost blue. Her muscles are tight and shimmer in the sunlight. I don't think I've ever seen something so beautiful in my whole entire life. It's almost bewildering. I'm surprised by how much I love being on a horse again, to feel its tremendous strength under me. Andrés and I ride toward the river. It's quiet, except for the clacking hooves and buzzing insects in the yellowed grass. A flock of gray birds passes over us and settles in a giant tree.
Doves,
Andrés says. The river is nearly gone now because of the drought. The only water that remains is brownish green and full of garbage, plastic bags, bottles, wrappers, and even a solitary shoe. I shiver when I remember my dream about Olga as a mermaid. I can still see her glowing face so clearly. The abandoned train station next to the river is boarded up now, the red paint peeling off in giant strips. The tracks are rusted, and the wood is worn. Andrés says the train has been gone for years now. It used to be bustling with people, but the company was crooked and couldn't sustain itself. I remember Mama Jacinta bringing me and Olga here when I was little. She brought us tiny wooden boxes of cajeta that was so sweet and sticky it hurt my teeth for hours. I also know that Papa Feliciano used to take this train to sell pots and pans in other towns. He died before they closed the line. I guess in a way it's good that he never saw it shut down. He loved that train. Big, fat flies begin biting Isabela's face and neck when we approach a clearing. She shakes her head to get them off, but it's no use. Even if I swat them away, they come right back. My hand is smeared with blood when I rub her where the flies have landed. I kiss the back of her head when Andrés isn't looking. We ride along the river until the sun dips behind the trees and the crickets begin to sing. A field of corn in the distance looks dry and shriveled, and I wonder what would happen if someone flicked a match at it. I could ride Isabela forever, But Andres says we should get back to the party so Mama Jacinta doesn't worry. When I say goodbye to Isabella, I press my face against her side and run my hand over her back. I think I can hear her heartbeat. Suddenly, I remember the time Olga and I rode our great uncle's horses the second time we came to Los Ojos. At first, I was too scared, but Olga told me that the horses wouldn't hurt me because they were magical creatures. And I believed her. Andres laughs.
What are you doing?
I smile. Nothing. Just giving her a hug.
Tio Chucho walks toward me, holding a beer.
Andele, mija, let's dance.
He looks a little wobbly. No thanks, Tio. I'm not much of a dancer.
Nonsense,
he says, and leads me to the dance floor.
The Montenegros are the best dancers in Los Ojos.
The song is about three girls who drive to a carnival and plummet to their deaths when the truck flips over the side of a cliff. I'm not sure why anyone would want to dance to that. Tio Chucho smells like he's sweating beer. His shirt is damp and his skin is sticky, but I keep dancing because I don't want to hurt his feelings. He's having a great time, spinning me around and singing along at the top of his lungs. After the third song, a group of men wearing black masks and holding rifles walks toward the entrance of the venue. Tio lets go of my hand. His face slackens.
Chingue su madre,
he mutters. ¿Qué, tío? What's happening?
Nothing, mija. I'll take care of it,
Tio says, and walks toward them. Everyone looks stiff and worried, but no one says a word. It's suddenly a party full of statues. Andres just keeps blinking. He looks like he might pass out. Are they soldiers? Are they narcos? I have no idea. One of the masked men stares at me the entire time, as if he's drilling holes into my body with his eyes. Tio Chucho pulls an envelope from his pocket and hands it to one of the men, who nods toward Andres. Tio returns to the party looking pale and terrified. When the man finally turns away from me, I notice a faded Santa Muerte tattoo on his forearm. What the hell was that? I whisper to Belén.
You need to stop asking so many questions, she says, and turns away from me.
Chapter 22. Belén forces me to go to the soccer game, even though I tell her I have a hatred for sports that is located deep inside my entrails. She says it doesn't matter. That's not the point of going. Soccer games are where young people hang out and hook up. There's not much else to do in Los Ojos. Stare at the mountains? Chase chickens? Shoot bottles? We sit on the top bleachers with Belén's friends, a group of mildly attractive girls who wear way too much makeup. Although they don't say anything petty or snarky, I can tell right away that they're jealous of my cousin. I don't know why I always notice these types of things. There's something about the way their eyes outline her body and settle on her face. A sort of longing. It's not that they want her. It's that they want to be her. After Los Tigres score their first goal, a dark guy in a cowboy hat comes toward us with bottles of Coke and plastic bags of pork skin slathered in red salsa. He distributes the drinks and snacks to everyone in our group and squeezes between me and Belén. All the girls laugh as if it were the funniest thing they've ever seen. I can feel the beads of sweat form on my upper lip.
How are you doing tonight, Señorita Reyes?
At first I wonder how he knows my last name, or who I am. But then I remember everyone knows everyone's business in Los Ojos. Tio Chucho says you can't even fart without the whole town finding out. Medium, I say, looking at the field, trying, for once in my life, to understand a sport. He laughs.
Why won't you look at me?
I shrug. I'm mute all of a sudden. Don't mind Esteban, Belen says, smirking. He can be a little pesado sometimes. I wouldn't call him pesado, but he's definitely assertive. I can't keep myself from staring at his dark and veiny forearms. I imagine how they would feel against my fingertips. I cross my legs so they don't brush against his. After the game, Belen and her giggling friends flee before I can ask them to wait for me.
I guess I should walk you home.
Esteban smiles. His teeth are bright and perfect. Yeah, I guess, I say, remembering what Belen said about walking alone at night. The sky is beginning to purple. I can see the sun and moon at the same time. Esteban makes me feel as if something were filling my chest with warm syrup, as if all my bones were being slowly removed from my body. For a second, I wonder what Connor might be doing, if he still thinks about me, but I remind myself that things are over between us. I have no idea why, but even though I just met Esteban and know virtually nothing about him, he makes me feel all goopy inside. A truck blasting a narco corrido wakes me from my reverie. When we get to the corner of Mama Jacinta's block, Esteban takes my hand.
I've liked you since you got here.
Well, I'd never seen you before, so that's kind of weird. I'm too nervous to look at him. Why do I have to be such an asshole, even when I don't want to be?
You don't remember seeing me that time you and Belen came into the fruit store? That's where I work.
I knew I had felt someone looking at me that day, but I didn't bother searching for the source. It's funny how your body knows things before you do. I shake my head. No, I didn't see you. Esteban's dark skin glistens under the streetlight. It reminds me of coffee. I want so much to touch his face, but I don't. We sit in Tia Fermina's backyard, gnawing on figs we picked from her tree. Tio Raul and Tio Leonel are inside watching the news. The sky is full of stars, and I stare at it in awe for such a long time that everyone notices and laughs at me. How could I forget the nights were like this?
Poor city girl,
Tio Chucho says, smiling.
She probably never sees stars in Chicago.
Not really. Maybe 3 or 4 at a time if I'm lucky, I say, and pick a tiny leaf from my sweater. I look back up and think about how some stars don't even really exist anymore, that seeing them is seeing the past. It's hard for me to wrap my brain around that. What a mindfuck. The ground feels good under my bare feet. Tia Estela sits behind me in a chair and braids my hair, her fingers cool against the back of my neck. Her hands in my hair are soothing. She's gentle, doesn't yank my hair like Ama used to when I was a kid.
Dios mío, mija,
Tia Estela says as she holds the braid up for everyone to see.
You have so much hair. How do you walk around like this? Doesn't your head feel heavy?
Sometimes, when it's wet, I say, and wonder what it would feel like to chop off all of my hair. What would I look like? I've had long hair my entire life. When I was born, my hair was a ridiculous shock of black. Ama said the doctors and nurses had never seen anything like it. I feel Belen stare at me from across the yard. I think she's used to being the beautiful one and doesn't appreciate the attention I'm receiving. It's both uncomfortable and satisfying at the same time.
Beautiful hair runs in the family, Mama Jacinta says, though you wouldn't know, looking at mine now.
She runs her hands through her short gray hair and smiles. Tio Chucho grins and shakes his hair as if he were in a shampoo commercial.
It's true. I look like a movie star.
I've eaten so many figs that my stomach hurts, but I can't stop. I love the taste of the sweet flesh, the crunch of tiny seeds between my teeth. The night is always perfect here. Never too cold. The air smelling of dirt and leaves. I think I almost get a whiff of the river. Then remember it's practically dried up. A phantom smell, I guess. I can't think of anything more calming than the sound of crickets and the rustle of the fig tree. If Tia had a hammock, I would ask to sleep here every single night. The white and yellow roses planted in old buckets are thriving despite the drought, because Tia Fermina cares for them as if they were children. Their persistence makes me feel hopeful. Andres gets up from his chair and approaches a cactus in the corner of the yard. I wonder what he's doing, but I don't ask. He presses his finger to the bud and whispers something. After a few seconds, he turns to all of us and says, "This one never bloomed, and the season's almost over." He frowns. "What kind of flower is that?" I ask.
"Nocturnal cactus flower. Forgot the name, but this one is a flop, I think."
"I've never heard of that. That's amazing." I run out of words. A flower that blooms only at night sounds like something out of a fairy tale. Tia Fermina comes out from the kitchen with a jug of agua de Jamaica and pours each of us a glass.
"This is good for digestion and high cholesterol. After eating those carnitas tonight, we all need it."
Tia Fermina is the oldest and always trying to take care of everybody. It's almost hard to believe that she's Belén's mother, because Belén is kind of selfish, mostly concerned with how pretty she is. The first night I got here, Tia Fermina gave me a small cloth bag full of paper worry dolls. She told me that before I go to sleep each night, I should tell them all my worries and put them under my pillow. They're supposed to disappear by morning. I never told her it didn't work. The agua de Jamaica is tart, sweet, and refreshing. I pour myself another glass. If the night were made into a drink, it would taste like this. Tia Fermina takes me to Delicias, three towns over, to buy some cheese. Supposedly, it's the best in the whole state. And I think I might agree, because it's sharp, creamy, and melts perfectly. It tastes amazing in enchiladas. A cheese worthy of a pilgrimage. Tia complains about the drought the whole ride over.
"It's ruining all the crops," she says. "The cows are emaciated. People don't know what to do anymore."
The land is definitely drier than I remember. The trees are yellow and brittle. Everything in the desert hunkers toward the ground. The huizaches that dot the mountains are short, and the twigs are armed with spines. Everything protects itself with needles here. Once in a while, a pregnant cloud hovers and teases the land with a trickle of rain. Tia Fermina is a few years older than Ama, and though they look so much alike, same black hair, light skin, and bright red lips, she's just not as pretty. That doesn't mean she's not attractive, though. Tia has a captivating face, like all the Montenegro women. It's just that hardly anyone is as beautiful as Ama. I wonder what it was like for them growing up. Did Tia always compare herself to her? Was she jealous? Did she ever wish she had crossed to the other side like her little sister? We park the truck at the bottom of a hill because it won't fit through the narrow streets. I suddenly have deja vu. I know I came to this town with Mama Jacinta once, long ago, but I don't remember why exactly. Did it have something to do with a goat? Or am I making that up? Sometimes my memory feels like a smeared photograph.
How is your mother?
Tia Fermina asks as we pant our way up.
Have you talked to her?
She called me yesterday. She sounds okay.
How was she before? You know, when she lost Olga.
She couldn't get out of bed. Just when I thought she was doing better, she'd go right back to sleeping for days and days. She hardly ate or drank anything. It scared me. She hasn't done that in a while, though. A man walks a blindfolded bull across the street.
Buenos dias,
he says, and tips his hat. That's the thing about Mexico. You have to say hello to people you don't even know.
My poor sister. And all of us here, useless, unable to help her. Ay, Diosito.
Tia Fermina sighs.
Every time I called her, she'd tell me she was fine, but I knew she wasn't. Of course she wasn't. How could she be fine without her daughter? That's the worst thing that could ever happen to you. I can't even fathom it, God forbid.
She crosses herself. She wasn't fine, and neither was I.
Ay, mija. I can't imagine what it's like to lose your sister.
Tia turns to me and touches my face.
Pobre criatura. And what about you and your mother? I know you two have fought a lot over the years. She's always said you were very terca.
That's how I've been described my whole life. Terca, necia, cabezona. All the synonyms for stubborn and difficult. A gust of wind carries the smell of burning garbage toward us. Yeah, we don't really understand each other.
You need to try harder, especially with your sister gone. You're all she has, Julia. She loves you so much. Maybe you don't see that, I don't know. Just please, don't make her life harder. I ask you as your aunt, as your mother's sister, please, be good to her.
Tia Fermina is out of breath now. She stops and wipes the sweat from her face with her forearm. I don't think Ama told her I tried to kill myself.
You don't understand, Tia. I try. I really do. We're just so different. She thinks I'm wild and crazy, but what I want makes sense to me. I want to be independent. I want to be my own person, with my own life. I want to make my own choices and mistakes. And she wants to know what I'm doing every second of the day. It makes me feel like I'm drowning.
Ay, mija. There is so much you don't understand.
Why does everyone say that to me? I know I'm young, but I'm not stupid.
That's not what I mean. It's that your mother has had such a hard life. You can't even imagine.
I know. She reminds me of it all the time. She's always telling me how hard she works and that I'm ungrateful.
Tia Fermina doesn't say anything for a long time. Tia? Are you okay?
I'm only telling you this so you can understand, so you can have more compassion.
She looks at the sky.
God, forgive me for doing this.
My muscles tense. I'm suddenly overwhelmed with thirst.
What? What is it? Tell me. Tell me now. I want to know now.
Tia finally looks at me.
You know how your parents crossed the border.
I've heard the story several times. Ama left with Apa against her mother's will. They crossed with a coyote. When they got to Texas, a man stole all their money. They stayed in El Paso with Apa's distant cousin and worked at a restaurant until they were able to save enough money to take the bus to Chicago. It was in the middle of winter and they didn't have jackets.
Mama said she had never felt so cold in her life. She thought her eyes would freeze inside her head. That's all I knew.
Your mother, El Coyote.
Tia looks like she's trying to untangle what she needs to say. She begins to cry.
He took her. He took her where?
I scream. I don't mean to, but it just comes out that way.
Where did he take her? What did he do?
I squeeze her hand so hard, I think I might break her fingers. Thea can't get the words out. My brain is pounding. A tattered gray cat darts past us.
I can't say it. I shouldn't have told you this. God forgive me.
Tia Fermina covers her mouth with her hand. She doesn't have to finish.
And Apa? Where was he? What did he do?
I can't stop screaming.
They held him down with a gun. There was nothing he could do.
Tia Fermina shakes her head.
No. No. That can't be true. No. I can't.
I sit down on the ground, near a mound of red ants, but I don't care. My body feels like it weighs 1,000 pounds. I picture my mother's face streaked with tears and dirt, my father bowing his head in defeat.
And Olga? What about Olga? She was...
I can't get the words out. Tia Fermina clasps her hands to her chest and nods.
See, mija, that's why I want you to know. So when you and your mother fight, you can see where she's come from and understand what's happened to her. She doesn't mean to hurt you.
That night, I don't fall asleep until morning. I just lie there thinking about my parents and how little I know them. I wake up at noon, my body aching. Because I don't have anywhere to go, no real obligations, the days blend together. I can't even tell them apart most of the time. I wake up, eat breakfast, help Mama Jacinta cook and clean, and then lie around reading and writing. After Belen gets home from school, she and I wander through the town aimlessly, eating all the junk food that will fit inside our bodies. Well, at least when my appetite hasn't disappeared. Sometimes we meet Esteban after he gets out of work. We either sit on a bench or walk around the square until we have to go home. Belen always leaves us alone for a while. She pretends she needs to run an errand, but I know exactly what she's doing. Esteban has never tried to kiss me, and it's all I can think about. I imagine his thick lips on mine. I picture his hands running through my hair and down my back, his body pressed against me. I never do anything about it, though. I feel as scared and vulnerable as a plucked bird. I know he said he liked me, but what if he didn't really mean it? What if he thinks I'm weird? What if I'm not pretty enough? Besides, how could I, with the whole town watching? I just sit there like a fool, making small talk and boring observations about stray animals, hoping I don't embarrass myself with my limited Spanish vocabulary. Today, Esteban is wearing jeans, a faded Beatles t-shirt, and a straw cowboy hat. I like the combination. Where did you get that shirt?
My cousin left it at my house, and I kept it, he says, smiling.
Do you even like the Beatles?
Not really.
You're weird. A mangy stray dog creeps toward us and begins sniffing me. Esteban seems very amused by this.
Weird, huh?
Yeah. Everyone likes the Beatles.
Apparently, that dog likes you.
He points his chin toward it. He's not my type.
Esteban laughs. You're silly, you know that? What exactly is your type, then?
I prefer them to be better groomed. Not so many fleas. Esteban smiles and pats my hand. I almost gasp and feel my eyes bug out with surprise. I'm so nervous I can't even move. We sit like that for a few seconds, until Belen comes out of the store with the sack of meat we have to take to Mama Jacinta for dinner. I jump up and leave without looking at Esteban, my heart inside my mouth. At dusk, Belen, my tías, Mama Jacinta, and I watch telenovelas. That's what all the women in Los Ojos do at that hour. They're all glued to their televisions. I could probably run around with my hair on fire, and they wouldn't even notice. During the opening credits of La Casa de Traición, a horrible show about a rich family with a shameful past, we hear shouting outside.
Hijo de tu pinche madre!
A man yells.
You're going to pay!
Belen mutes the TV, and we all stare at each other, confused. I can't understand the rest of the yelling. The only words I can make out are puto and piedras. Someone honks a car horn. Tires screech. A dog barks. The commotion stops after a few seconds, and just when we think it's over, the gunshots begin. Everyone drops to the floor, even poor Mama Jacinta.
Again? I thought this had ended, she says. Why, God? Why?
Tia Fermina rubs her back and tries to calm her down, but Mama Jacinta whimpers and cries. She is distraught beyond consolation. Tia Estela crosses herself over and over. Everyone crawls toward the back of the house. I'm the last one. I peek out the cracked door before I go. Two dead bodies are lying in the middle of the street. Tia Fermina says she needs to give me a limpia to get rid of my susto. She says they can't send me home like this after what happened. What would my mother say? My family members claim that a scare can kill you. I call that a heart attack, but whatever. I'll go along with this if it makes everyone feel better. Tia takes me to the storage room where Mama Jacinta keeps her extra dry food. There are sacks of flour, beans, and dry corn scattered on the floor. I lie on a small cot, and once I get comfortable, Tia Fermina makes little crosses all over my body with an egg, beginning with my head and working her way down to my feet. The cool shell against my skin feels comforting. When I was little, I was confused about the process of this spiritual cleansing. All I knew was that it involved an egg, so I imagined they used a cooked one, likely fried, which left the recipient greasy and smeared with yolk. Boy, was I stupid. But I figured it out when I saw them do it to my cousin Vanessa after she was almost hit by a car. The raw egg traps all the rotten crap clogging up your soul. Tia Fermina whispers the prayers so faintly I can't understand them. After she makes dozens of crosses all over my body, she says it's time to see inside the egg, to understand what's been stewing inside of me. Tia cracks the egg into a glass of water and holds it up to the light. The water turns thick and cloudy, and when we look closer, we see a dot of dark blood in the center of the yolk.
Dios mío, mija!
Tia gasps.
What's going on with you?
I have to go back home because Mama Jacinta is afraid the narcos will continue killing each other. After a year and a half of relative peace, Los Ojos has erupted into violence again. She tells me that I need to take the bus to the airport because it's much less likely that the narcos will pull us over. It's especially dangerous for Tio Chucho to drive, since the cartel has been after Andres for years. Why did Tio Chucho give that man an envelope? I ask Mama Jacinta before bed, at Paulina's party. She sighs.
It's a bribe, so they'll leave Andres alone. They want him to work for them, and they come around every once in a while. Can you imagine working for those animals? Ni Dios lo